What's up, After the Tones Drop family? Dropping in real quick with an exciting update from your favorite podcast. We're wrapping up the first season in the first week of May. I can't even believe it. It is crazy wild how fast this has gone. While we take a short month-long break to gear up for season two, we've got something special lined up for you. We're rolling out four fantastic bonus episodes featuring some of our favorite voices from our past guests. First up, we'll have Jason Warne, the mindfulness medic, who will help soothe your spirit. Then, Kenny Mitchell will take us behind the scenes with Operation Yellow Tape. William Young from Just Corrections will share his insights on the system. And Jess Flores will be gearing up to take us into the next shift with her podcast. Each of these incredible advocates brings a unique perspective to the world of first responder mental health. Stay tuned and keep those vibes positive, and let's keep learning and growing together. Thanks for being such an awesome part of this journey. We'll catch you soon with those bonus episodes. Today is one of those opportunities to relinquish control. There's a lot of people have their own experiences with control. There's so many nuggets in each phone call that I had with these people.
I would say that there is controlling, right? And there's a profound difference between being in control and controlling. But when I'm scared, I go straight to controlling. And the minute I go to controlling, I'm immediately breaking everything good in my life.
Being in control goes back to my faith. I am in control of what's in front of me. I can't be in control what's around me.
In my opinion, I do believe that we have some control over certain situations, mostly how we conduct ourselves.
Everybody has agendas. And the thing about agendas is there's always truth in the agenda, but it's not the whole truth. It's just that there are things that you can't control that will drive you insane if you let it. You know, control is not the answer. Surrender is the answer.
It's the first responder, the first to get the call, the first on scene, greeted by God knows what, pushed beyond the limits that they don't even set. Then what happens? You're listening to After the Tones Drop. We're your hosts. I'm Cinnamon, a first responder trauma therapist who founded our practice after seeing the need for specialized care following a local line of duty death.
And I'm Erin. I'm a first responder integration coach.
We help first responders receive transformational training, therapy, and coaching.
Now we come to you to explore, demystify, and destigmatize mental health and wellness for first responders.
Our show brings you stories from real first responders, the tools they've learned, the changes they've made, and the lives they now get to live.
Today is one of those opportunities to relinquish control, isn't it?
Yeah. I was just going to say, one of the things that we've talked about since we started doing this was because of the way our lifestyles are personally, as well as the work that we do, it was always a good idea to have a couple episodes up our sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
And this would be the week to have an episode up our sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
And you have done an incredible job on the fly. Kind of
pulling it out of my ass in a beautiful way.
Pulling it out of your ass, but in a divine spiritual way that met our needs and spoke into where we were, as well as our larger community in a lot of ways every day and also on special days.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing with this whole episode is for the first time in 7 months, I was willing to say, what if we didn't have an episode this week? Because not a whole lot has gone, quote unquote, according to plan over the past couple weeks for us.
Yeah.
And in that moment, I realized how much I just surrendered. Like, what's the worst thing that can happen? Just about nothing. I could think of a lot of things, but they're not real. They're not true.
And nobody's going to hate us or quit listening to us if we
have a human moment.
Had to, right.
Yeah.
Like if we became human.
Right. And that is when this idea popped in my head about control. I know specifically for us, this week has really put both of us in a position that we've questioned how much control we actually have with the things that go on around us.
Or how much letting go and trusting the process we're actually doing. Because I would say that's more where I was coming from, you know, that I let go and I wasn't controlling. And then I found out I was.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's on both sides of that coin. Mm-hmm. The people who think that they have relinquished control and trusted something greater themselves have had a lesson. And the people who thought they had control had a lesson.
Yeah. And without going into too much detail, this past month has been full of tragedy and loss and watching people that we care about deeply no longer be on this earth. And that's been a super hard pill to swallow. Each experience had its own deep, I don't know even what I'm looking for. Each experience had its own unique experience within it for whatever reason, based on who the individual was. But either way, no matter what, it's been hard.
Yes. I actually went and got a massage last Monday. And as I was laying on the table, I flashed back to one of the last few times I was there. And I remember crying and the tears were going through the face hole and hitting the floor. And as I was laying there, I thought, what the hell was I crying about? I have no recollection of, you know, kind of, I feel like it's been a few weeks of hold my beer.
Yes.
Right? Like when we thought it was bad, if we thought things were tough, the universe was like, here, hold my beer and see how tough it can get.
Yeah.
And
now we know.
It all just feels like a little bit of a blur.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Memo, are you there? God, it's me, Margaret. Enough of this shit.
Yeah. We see that we can handle it and we don't want to. And that's the tricky part about life.
Yeah.
Thanks. Is that old saying, like, God won't give you any more than you can handle. It's like, okay, I'm clear on what I can handle now. And we're still moving and we're still going. And doesn't make it any less difficult, challenging, heartbreaking. I will say, in the midst of all of this, I had the opportunity to experience a 3-day intensive training all around relationships with my husband. And in fact, we kind of oversaw it. By oversaw it, they call us captains, but basically what we do is we organize the whole thing. We bring in any staff that's going to help. We invite people to come. We hold the space. We make sure everything's organized and things go off the way they go so that the trainer can create magic, quite frankly, within the room. And when I went into this training, I was actually a little apprehensive because mentally I was really feeling some deep feelings. And because, oh man.
You're probably emotionally cashed too.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
And physically.
And this relationships training isn't about just intimate relationships. It's about relationships as a whole. So it invited us to really look at past relationships and family and parents and exes and all these things. And loss was a big part of it. Who have we lost that we feel like there is still opportunity for closure or connection or whatever that is for each individual? And on Friday night, the first night, I remember leaving and we were debriefing with our staff and I was so full of rage. I mean, I can honestly say that I don't think I've ever experienced this level of rage.
Yeah.
And all I could say to the trainer when she's like, so, you know, we're going around, like, what are you taking away from tonight? Like, what did you create? What are you noticing? And everybody's like, connection, blah, 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 like, and it got to me and I was like, I am so fucking angry right now. I was like, I don't even know. I was like, I don't even know what to do with this. I mean, and I was tense. And she was like, good, good. And I'm like, I'm so tired of being up against this wall where I'm so close to some kind of breakthrough or awareness. And I just keep smacking into it. And she's like, you know, there's an opportunity tonight to just do nothing but release that anger, like floor it, figure it out. And she was like, you don't have to know what it is to work through it. And I'm like, and me being controlling, I'm like, yeah, that's bullshit.
Yeah, I do.
Yes, I do. How am I supposed to work through something I don't know what it is? She's like, it could be a collection of many, many, many things. But that's all I could remember was experiencing rage. And then that night I had this like bing, light bulb moment. And I'm like, oh, I know what it is. It is the fact one, that I always think I need to know what it is, and that I need to be in control at every waking moment of my life because of whatever belief I have about, you know, shit's going to fall off the map, or, you know, it's not going to be done right, or maybe it's even FOMO in some capacity.
Yeah.
And when I said, oh my gosh, the control is in the surrender. It's actually, it's like I get to.
You say that.
And I say that.
I've heard that so many times from you. And it's like every time you're in a situation, and it's not a one-time lesson. It's a situational lesson. Like not, oh, why can't I learn this lesson? It's here's a thing that I don't know what to do with. And I have to realize that that lesson is the one I apply to this situation.
And it's every time. I mean, I did a 3-hour workshop on it for people, but there was a difference this time in the awareness of it. It was more than awareness. It was like integration.
Ooh.
And that's the irony behind it, is that surrender isn't doing anything. It's actually letting go of everything. It's being in the flow.
Which feels so scary.
Yeah, but you know what? It didn't this time.
What's on the other side, Erin?
It didn't feel scary this time. It felt like I could breathe. And that's the word I've been using a lot lately, is like, I just feel smothered in so many areas of my life. Like, just like, I cannot breathe. And after I had that moment, it was like, I could breathe. And I've been experiencing joy, like real joy. I've been experiencing this area of, it's okay. Like, I can take care of myself without being fearful of letting people down. I can do what's best for myself and my family. I can still be present in a different capacity for my clients. And that was the other thing, is we talked a lot about masculine and feminine energy. And my story has been, well, I operate in heavy masculine because I work with a highly dominant masculine, sometimes even unhealthy masculine energy with our work. And then all of a sudden I was like, wait a minute. That's actually bullshit. That's not true at all, because the truth is,
that's what we're trying to take them out of.
Right. And if I can zoom out and look at how I work with folks, it's like I might have to come in kind of like, I got balls, that kind of energy at the beginning. So they
like day one and two, and then you flip
right
to your maternal side.
Yeah. That nurturing, holding space, it's going to be okay. Feminine, safe space. And oh my gosh, that, oh, I just felt like I got let off the hook. It felt so good.
Unfortunately, not yet, but I'm right behind. I'm coming. I'm going to catch up.
And, you know, of course I say,
you had a thing. Yeah. Like that acted as the catalyst to, and as much as you weren't sure that that was where you needed to be, and you definitely questioned, like, should I back out at the last minute? When I spoke to you on, I don't know, Monday, Tuesday night, it was very clear that you were very clear that as difficult as you thought it was going to be, it ended up being exactly what you needed. And I think that's what I meant earlier when I said, like, letting go or surrendering, especially when we have military folks or a paramilitary environment, like, how do we not sugarcoat it and we call it what it is, which is surrender, and still get folks like that to buy in? Like our friend Gabe, he doesn't use the word retreat. Do you remember this? Gabe doesn't use the word retreat when he tells a story. He said something like, we push forward to the back or something, some twist on it. Like there's that like never say die kind of thing, you know, like we'll never retreat, but we will be wise enough to know when to turn around and head back the way we came.
Yeah, like when it's time to stand down.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting that, and this is human nature to want to control. And it's so based out of fear. Gosh, it really is. There, what is on the other side of this? That's, it makes me very vulnerable.
So part of my recovery, our recovery, all of our recovery has been that component of spirituality, of leaning into this higher power. And there have definitely been days in the last 13 where I've noticed, oh, what's my spiritual connection look like? Like, am I spiritually fit? Like, what am I slacking at? And what I found was, when push comes to shove, my spiritual fitness is on point. Like, that is the most profound thing that has really helped me get through these last few weeks, other than constantly trying to tell the therapist in me to be quiet. And that's probably more gentle than what I'm actually saying to her. But it really has made such a difference to have that spiritual connection to something greater than myself, because I think the biggest lesson I've learned, and you and I have talked about this, is if we can find blame or fault or responsibility, as yucky as that feels, it still feels better than how terrifying it is to realize you have none. No control, no responsibility. Like, if there's nothing that you did wrong and bad shit still happens, that's terrifying.
Yes.
And I've been sitting a lot in that and working from terrifying to comforting. And that is through that process of surrender. And what do I say? Just because it's not our plan doesn't mean that it's not the plan. And just because we don't like the plan doesn't mean it's not how it all's supposed to happen. It just simply means we don't like it.
Yeah. Oh, that makes me think of my husband's song that he talks about that. You could say it's such a shame, or you could say it couldn't go any other way, you know?
Any other way. That's it. I was like, the only way.
I'll have to put it on here because I won't get dinged for copyright.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, you could, but that would be a whole different conversation if he tried to sue us.
He would be like, yes, please put that on there.
Put that on there.
So that's kind of what allowed me to be in this space to receive, and this sounds so woo-woo, but to like receive this data as to what today's episode would be about. Because when I got out of my own way, when I let go of the fear of letting listeners down, letting you down, letting whoever down, like what about our clients that use this as a resource in between sessions? I was like, oh no, there's a lot of people out there in this world that have their own experiences with control, with either holding on so tight that it blows everything up, or having the ability to realize that they don't have control of a lot of things outside of their hula hoop. And so I decided to reach out to the universe, to the interwebs, and kind of put out a request on various channels on Facebook. And the post said, hey, control, what's your take on it? And do we actually control the things in our lives? And who would be interested in having a conversation with me about this? And so oddly enough, I was actually so beautifully surprised that I had a lot of people reach out and they're like, yeah, I'll talk to you about this. And that was super cool. I had to pick.
Yeah, I saw it say, like, not only will I talk about this, but I will make myself available to talk about this, regardless of what time it is that you are available to talk. I mean, these people were, they wanted to share their experiences. And I think part of that comes from the value that people have already seen in our work, in our podcast. And also it speaks to the importance of those lessons for each individual person. You know, like how often do we get asked, would you like to share one of the hardest lessons that you've got on the other side of?
Oh, right.
Because I think this is it. Like, this is the question.
Mm-hmm.
I read something this morning. How is it that so many of us are still doing the work, eat, sleep, entertain cycle in our lives, and we haven't taken the time to think about the bigger picture of why we're even here? You know, we just get into, and I may date myself with this, but time to make the donuts. You know, that old guy that showed up every morning at Dunkin' Donuts, and he just had this monotonous life.
I'm only laughing because Rob left to go to a gig this morning, and he was like, all right, got to go make the donuts.
See? Okay. Yeah, that's it, right? Is that we get so distracted by so many things that we forget that we are spiritual beings having this human experience. And Brittany Murphy, God rest her soul, she said this thing in an interview once where she was like, whenever I have hard emotions, I just like to think that I was in some spiritual realm and I was approached with the opportunity to come to earth and take on a human form and have human experiences. And that meant that I was going to be able to access this huge range of emotion. And some of it will be phenomenal, and some of it will be so ridiculously painful. And I had the opportunity to take advantage of that. And so whenever I have painful feelings, I just remember what a luxury it is to be able to be here and be present and feel that degree of pain. And like you, I was raging. And I have said, I don't think I've ever experienced a level of anger quite like that. And I didn't know where it came from. Well, I didn't know I had that kind of anger in me.
Right.
And you were talking about in the training, your trainer was saying, okay, so sit with it and just let it be. And if something comes to you out of it, great. But to me, anger is such an aggressive forward motion, right? Like there's no softness in it. There's no sinking into it. There's no vulnerability in it. It's a very aggressive attacking emotion. Whereas like sadness might be more gentle and soft and an opportunity for reflection. But when you're too busy marching forward towards the enemy, it's hard to find that. And so that's been an interesting process to figure out how to look at my anger, how to be gentle with myself when I'm having it, and how to find some vulnerability in that anger so I can peel it back. Because I've said before, anger feels really shitty. I don't like how anger feels in my body. But man, I didn't want to let it go of it this week.
Yeah.
It was like a baby and I didn't want anybody to take from me.
Yeah. Because then what does that mean? That you don't care? That?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
That was exactly what it is. It was like, if I get to a place where I'm not just overwhelmed with anger and grief, then what does it look like to someone watching me from a different realm? And that was my biggest thing. I didn't want anybody to, quote, look down on me from the skies and not think that I wasn't devastated by this. I didn't want to laugh. I didn't want to have fun. I didn't want to forget. It was like I needed to have a hold of that to make sure that it was apparent. And it was no human witnesses that I was worried about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Our brains are so maddening.
Being humans, not for the weak.
No.
So, I will say that I did end up talking to various people, and I ended up narrowing it down to 4 different people that I spoke to. And for our listener, I want you to know that this is going to be a little bit different of quality because I did use some software. It was a recording of a phone call. So please be patient with the quality of audio because there's so many really neat nuggets in each phone call that I had with these people. And ironically, all in some kind of giving position in their life as far as career goes. One is in cybersecurity, which protects us in a different kind of way. And she is tough as nails. And I've also seen so much softness, which she had kind of the same revelations I've had as of late. One is a clinician helping people heal from injury, more in like the physical therapy kind of realm. One is both retired firefighter and cop. He did both, who has struggled with addiction and other concerns in life, being raised in a strict Baptist home with a father who controlled everything. And then the final one is a man that I love so much. To me, he's like this guru, but he's a retired assistant chief who was standing chief for a fire department for a while. And his take is like so powerful. The one thing that he said that really stood out to me was control is the problem.
Yeah.
Like control is the thing. It's the problem. And I was just like, oh, I love you. So please take the time to listen to each call that we have on this show today, because there's such beautiful nuggets from each one. And I hate to say it, but I'm so excited to say it. I hate to say it because you probably don't want to hear it, listener, but I'm excited to say it because it confirms that we, I think, have the opportunity to surrender. And that is, each one kind of came to the concept and idea that we really don't have control over anything outside of ourself and our reactions. That's it.
Well, and don't you think that this is I see it both as ironic and serendipitous and whatever else. But our time with Ed, you know, I had somebody in a session listen to the little reel that we had with Ed about the control.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can control something for 5 minutes, it makes you think that you can control everything. And so it's almost divine timing that Ed's episode was what it was. And then now we're talking about this.
Happens every time, girl. Happens every time.
And how many times, Erin, do you think that you have said in a session something along the lines of like, trust the process? Or when you've trusted the process, can you look at the evidence of how things have turned out for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is one of those things where that's hard to go there right now. And I think that's what time and distance does.
We're going to go ahead and turn it over to the recordings now.
The guests.
Yeah, our guests. And, you know, I did make an agreement that I would not really say who they were, anything like that.
Sure.
And none of them said I couldn't, but I just feel like that's not necessary. You'll get enough about them just by listening. So this is going to be a longer episode probably, but be patient. There's something for everybody on this episode. So we hope you find value in it.
And I would definitely just want to say thank you, Erin, from both me, who wasn't functioning, as well as our audience, who has come to look forward to Wednesday mornings at 4 a.m. when this drops. And I appreciate that you had this pop of creativity, which is not unlike you. You're full of creativity, but that you found a way to move us from breakdown and potentially skipping a week so we could just be fully human to perhaps giving us exactly what we needed this week. And this was a little bit tricky. I'm not part of these conversations. I'm not part of these recordings. So I am just as excited as our listeners to hear what magic you made with all of these people.
Yeah. And now we got new technology, and you're welcome. And thank you for surrendering to the process and trusting the process for this one.
So going back to that question of why are so many of us caught in that cycle of, you know, sleep, work, eat, entertain, sleep, work, eat, entertain, and not being reflective on their experience as a human, I think you just showed us how to do that. How to have a human experience and be able to reflect on it and create some meaning that validates why we're here beyond eat, work, and sleep.
There's a lot in there. A lot in there. Aw.
So maybe eating, working, and sleeping, the only reason we're doing it is to figure this shit out. It's a decoy.
Yeah. We got to have tools. We got to have ways to actually practice all this stuff. And so, yeah, the decoy is that. Oh boy, it's getting deep on here.
I know. You can say it's a shame, or you can say it couldn't go any other way.
Hello, can you hear
Hello.
Me?
Hello, I can.
Hi.
Thank you
for taking the time out of your day to have a conversation about this whole concept of control. I really appreciate that.
You are so welcome.
So yeah, I guess what I'm curious about is getting other people's perspectives and opinions about control, and specifically control in life. Like, do you actually think that we have control? So what is your take on that?
Man, I've been on a control journey for a hot minute, personally and professionally. So first of all, absolutely not. Absolutely not. There is no control. There's no control. I would say that there is controlling, right? And there's a profound difference between being in control and controlling. And so what I have discovered in my personal life and my professional life is that when I am controlling, I am clamping down on what is right now. I'm saying, this is it. Because nothing new and different can occur when I'm so focused on controlling. It's just fossilizes everything. Like, great, I have this, and this is all I'll ever have. So when I focus on control, nothing new can come in. I can't innovate. I can't create. I can only get what I've got.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love you just tapped into the difference between control and controlling. So what happens in your life when you notice that you're being controlling? Like, why do you think that you are trying to control the things around you?
Oh, it's always about fear. It's always about being scared. And I had a really rough childhood, and there was no stability ever. It was always just crazy addiction, homelessness, things like that. And so when I try to create control, I'm trying to be safe. And there's just no safety, external safety, right? Like you can do what you can do, I guess, right? Like you can make all the money you need to feel safe. You can, you know, clamp down on your relationships. You can try to make it happen, or I can try to make it happen, I should say. But when I'm scared, I go straight to controlling. And the minute I go to controlling, I'm immediately breaking everything good in my life.
Mm. Can you tell me more about that? What do you mean by breaking everything good?
Yeah. So, and this is just fresh off a therapy session where I was working with that fear and that need to control everything. And so, for example, I've been working on a business since May, and I have not been able to get it over the line. Like, I'm just struggling. Like, I can't seem to get the ball rolling, and I'm a doer. Like, somebody points me at a target, I go get her done. But the challenge that I've had is that I was so afraid of my own success and so afraid of the good in my life, because I'm very comfortable with struggle. I'm comfortable with the things that don't work and fixing them. But when things are good, what good am I? And so I've been resisting the heck out of good. And so I've been controlling, trying to control myself into making this business. But really, what I needed to do was let go of control and have my own creative process, because I'm trying to do something new with a very old method that I'm just clamping down on. I'm going to make myself do it. But that doesn't lead to anything new and different. So I get in that cycle of almost, I'm going to control my way into this. And then it doesn't work. And then I'm like, well, I'm going to control it harder. And then it really doesn't work.
Yeah.
So that's where I've been. And just realizing that for me, and I'm not saying this is for everyone, but for me, the root of control is fear.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I really appreciate that you said a couple key things which really landed with me, which is the concept that when I am controlling, I am really afraid.
Yes.
And for me, it's I'm afraid of what I'm going to lose, or afraid of what I might get. And can I handle that? And that's a huge, profound moment in life. Yes. But what it sounds like is that control is an illusion. Like, we don't actually have control. That's what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, absolutely not. And so professionally also, I'm in cybersecurity, and that's all about control, command and control, in fact. Like, it is the ultimate in control. It originated in, the military, to keep everyone safe and to control everything all of the time. And so I tend to go there both personally and professionally, and I've like structured my life around control. And first thing you learn in cybersecurity is that I think it was Muhammad Ali that said, everybody has a plan until you're punched in the face.
Yes.
We control nothing. What we can do instead of control is create structure and reduce fragmentation and then roll with what comes.
Perfect. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to give me your take on it.
You're welcome, and thank you so much for asking me. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
See, whether folks really feel like we have control in our lives, and so I appreciate you're one of the first responders I've spoken to about this, so I'll be curious to see what your take is on the whole thing.
It's very interesting. You know, control to me was the first 17 years of my life. My father was a Baptist preacher. Control was very dominant from him and my mother. And control was, you're going to do this. You're not going to do anything else. You're going to do this. You're going to be at church on Sunday night. You're going to be there Wednesday, and then you're going to be the next Sunday. So I didn't really break control from him and her until I was 18. I had about 6 months till I graduated. And I thought, you know what? I'm fixing to be 18. I want to do what I want to do. And I went down to the Chevrolet dealership, found a brand new 1981 Z28, said I want it. And they're like, well, you got to get your dad to sign. I said, no, I don't. They're like, yeah, you do. It was about 3 weeks before my 18th birthday. I said, all right, I'll be back. And I talked to him about it. And he said, you don't need to do that. You need to just go to college, spend your money on that. I was like, that's not what I want to do. I want to be in control of what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And so I waited that 3 weeks. And after I turned 18, the next day, I went down there. The sticker price on the car was $12,200. I paid him $11,500 in cash, drove it off the showroom floor. I was in control at that point in my life.
Yeah, it was almost like a rebellion to the control that had been.
It was totally rebellious. Mm-hmm. I drove it up into the driveway. He looked at it. He said, you have messed up. I said, no, I haven't. Well, you know, yes and no. My control at that time was that you have had control over me for that many years. Now I have control over my life. You can't touch me. I'm an adult, according to the law. And fast forward 40 whatever years, my control over my life escalated after that point. And I thought, well, nobody can stop me. And there was one person that could stop me. That was God. And he did stop me several times, but I didn't recognize it. And so I just kept on going. And I started my career as a fireman. As a fireman, you really don't have control over people. I mean, you don't tell people to do what you want them to do as a fireman. And then I left there after 10 years and became a cop. And as a cop, they tell you, yes, you have control over people. You're taking away their rights. Once you tell them to stop doing what they're doing, show you their hands, you took away their control. They no longer have control over what they do.
Well, they do, but there'll be consequences.
Exactly.
So unless they want to face the consequences of not listening, they will put their hands up, right?
Right. And there are those who did, thank God, more than didn't. But I guess as a cop, the whole atmosphere is, by God, I'm the law. I'm Johnny Law. I'm telling you what to do. I am in control of this entire situation. It's not true. I mean, you're not totally in control. So I had a hard time with that. I had a hard time with being put in charge of task force that I was in control of, and that would be 10 to 20 officers at one time. I was ultimately responsible for what they did. So I was in control for what they did. And it took a while for me to realize that I'm not totally in control of this. These people are going to do what they want to do. And it didn't help that I was self-medicating with alcohol. And that kind of led up to where I was at when I had my shooting in 2014 and I got shot. And everything went downhill from there. And I realized I was not in control of anything. I was like, I could not control this. I mean, I got gangbangers looking after me, looking after my family, wanting to know where my wife works, wanting to know where my children go to school. And I couldn't control that. So I just realized alcohol was not allowing me to control this. And I pulled away from it. And I have not been totally faithful to it. I mean, I've fallen several times. I know a lot of people have. But for me personally, when I have several months of sobriety and I fall. Then it takes several months for me to discover what happened and I can isolate it. And that's control to me. I'm controlling the fact that I realize I fail. But even though you think you're in control, anything can push you over the edge. There are so many things. I mean, just like yesterday, my nephew, he fell at work, had a brain bleed, and now he can't drive for 6 months, and we're looking at all kinds of things. And me and him were really close. We hunted, we shot together, we went to the range, and I just can't imagine my nephew in this situation. And so being in control goes back to my faith. And my faith started in January of 2022 when I went to John 3:16, spiritual boot camp for men with addictions. Mm-hmm. And that showed me how to deal with this. Once I got that message from his dad yesterday, try to hold together, I knew that he will be okay because I'm not going to fall. I'm in control of the fact that the drinking leads to worse repercussions in my life. It always has. It always will. That's why I'm sitting here as a retired police officer with 3 DWIs, as a felon. I have come back to my faith with God and told him, look, you didn't do this to him on purpose. There's a reason. There's something going on. I know that. And I accept that, and I pray about it. And so maybe I said too much. I don't know.
No. Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to hear about your loved one. And that right there is one of the most powerless things.
Yeah.
Knowing that someone you care about has been injured and there's nothing you can do about it. And what I'm hearing and what you're saying, it sounds like you've kind of gotten to a point where you're clear that, and please, I don't want to put words in your mouth, so correct me if I'm wrong, but you've gotten to a point where you realize, like, I am in control, but only in how I handle things, not in what happens around me. Would you say that's accurate?
That is true. I am in control of what's in front of me. I can't be in control of what's around me. It breaks my heart. So
yeah,
I just have to be in control of my emotions, and I trust in God to take care of this. And so that's a control issue, is trusting him and having faith that he will take care of him and he'll take him where he will. And I'll be okay with it.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing you say is that you have trust. To me, that sounds more like surrender than anything. That sounds like the complete opposite of control. It sounds like you are trusting that your higher power, which is God, will take care of your nephew, and that there's nothing within your human power that you can do in this moment.
Yeah, there's nothing I can do. When I grew up, I thought I was in control. And then as I grow older, and especially after my job, being a cop, I realized, you know, I'm not in control of anything. I mean, it could have been, well, I could have been dead. So
right.
It's out of my control.
Well, I really appreciate your time and you sharing your experience with this.
Yeah, you're welcome, Erin. Thank you for asking me. I appreciate it.
Of course.
All right.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. We're officially on the recorded line. So, yeah, I am collecting data, if you will, on, you know, people's take on control. Do we actually have control of the things that go on in our lives? What's your opinion?
Well, so I am a healthcare worker. I've been a healthcare professional for 31 years. And I was thinking about this in two different areas, my personal relationships and my professional relationships. And in my opinion, I do believe that we have some control over certain situations, mostly how we conduct ourselves. And I would say that setting expectations in a professional and a personal level is a way to perhaps ensure control in some aspects in communication. But ultimately, we don't have control over other people. We only have control over ourselves. And I also was thinking about this in my past marriage, and there definitely was some control struggles. And I think some of that comes from fear, and some of it comes from social conditioning or the way that we were raised. And here's a funny example is that I remember an argument that my ex-husband and I got into over how we fold our underwear. Mm-hmm. And it was just, you know, and I look back at it now and I think how silly, like, you know, I mean, just that's the way I was taught from my mom. And that's the way she was taught from her mom. And then he did it differently because that's the way he was taught from his mom. And it doesn't really matter.
I mean, lots of people don't fold their underwear, but
correct. And so I was young and newly married, and, you know, and I just look back at that and laugh because I was so attached to my way was the right way, and he was attached to his way was the right way. And it just created conflict. And again, looking back, it's just so trivial. It didn't matter. And it certainly didn't matter in our marriage because now we're not together. So,
yeah.
But I do feel that ultimately control in relationships is often about either manipulation, fear, or conditioning from the way that you were raised and taught, either because you learned one way and you want to do the complete opposite, or you learned one way and you know nothing different.
Yeah.
Something that my ex-husband and I uncovered in marriage counseling is that his effort to control me and my actions in the relationship was, in essence, based in fear that he thought that I would leave him. In reality, his controlling nature is one of the things that pushed me to want to leave.
Wow. So he was controlling out of fear, but his control is what actually took you out.
Well,
controlling out of fear of losing you, but then the control is what drove you two apart.
Correct. Well, that was one of the things. He was abusive. But the verbal abuse was typically manifested in fear. Mm. You know, he would always say, "Don't ever leave me." And initially in our marriage, I would say, "I'm not going to leave you." And then as things continued to progress and worsen, my response then became, "Don't give me a reason to."
Right.
Yeah. At that point, I knew that things were not going well and things were not really being resolved in therapy or the counseling, but he would try to control just basic, simple things. He would pick an argument before I would leave, or if we were on our way somewhere, if it was a social situation that he didn't want to do. Mm-hmm. Then he would pick an argument, I think, with the intention of not going to do the activity, or that we wouldn't stay very long. That's an example. And, you know, it was very exhausting to just constantly walk on the eggshells and never quite know what was going to set him off.
I bet it was.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, and then you took back your control and said, "Peace out."
Right.
"I got to go."
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Again, like, it escalated to very verbally abusive. And then our final blow, I thought he was going to punch me, and then he punched the wall instead. But I was the person in fear in that moment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had made up my mind. Like, that is it. You know, I will not be the abused wife. And so that was the night that we agreed to divorce. But here's another example. There was a weekend he was going away fishing, and I had some car trouble. So my car was in the shop, and I wanted to rent a car. And he told me no. I said, "Well, what do you mean?" And he said, "Well, you don't need to go anywhere." And that did not set well with me. And so I called and made arrangements to get a car, and they brought it to me. And I just thought, you know, you're not going to tell me that I can't leave the house. You know,
like, right.
That's not okay. That's one of many examples, but he was trying to control me. He would always spring it on me last minute so that I couldn't make plans with girlfriends or whomever to go and do social things without him. That was his way of controlling me so that I wouldn't leave. I never gave him a reason to be jealous or, you know, thinking that I was cheating on him or anything like that. But that was his way of controlling me. And, you know, it took me a while to pick up on all of that. You know, ultimately it didn't work in his favor.
Yeah. Yeah, once you figured it out, you learned that you could take back your power,
right,
and change that dynamic. And so that's the interesting part for me with control, is that rarely are we in control. Like, actually, I mean, but we can be empowered. We can make choices. Some choices may be negative. We get to be willing to pay the consequences. Some choices may be challenging, but either way, we are surrendering in some capacity.
Absolutely.
And that could be.
And we really don't have control over anyone else.
Oh.
You know,
clearly.
And people try, and some people do, but it usually doesn't work out well.
Right. Yeah, someone ends up suffering when we try to control others, whether it's the person that is controlling or the person is being controlled. And that's a dangerous slippery slope in and of itself.
Absolutely.
Because I know you well. That's why you have turned into teaching women how to use their voice and stand in their power and be assertive in certain fashions and create boundaries. And you've kind of been that stand for a lot of other women. So
absolutely.
Based on your experiences, you have taught women that it doesn't have to be that way. And so I appreciate this conversation, because this is a take that we haven't gone down yet. And I'm certain that there are listeners out there that would relate and appreciate it. And, you know, like to hear that side of it too.
Absolutely. And thank you for offering the opportunity.
My pleasure. All right. Looks like we're good to go. And I'm excited to hear from you, because I have the utmost respect for you, first of all. Heard a little bit about your experiences in the past, and then you kind of evolved into a different space in life. And especially because you're a retired first responder, I think that has value too on maybe the things that you've learned about control or perhaps lack thereof or whatnot. So yeah, I mean, what is your take on control? And do you think that we actually have control of things over our lives?
Well, my blessing is that, you know, I'm in recovery, and that really helped me in my job. And the example I give is the one I was thinking about. You know, I'm assistant chief, and there were four positions. I started out in fire prevention, then I went to operations. And we had a problem with sick with pay use, and we were starting up with computers and stuff so we could show when people would say, like, for instance, we're trying to get a day off and then didn't get it because of scheduling and overtime and stuff like that. And then they would call in sick. So, you know, I figured, well, all I got to do is just show them that we're watching and rationalize with them. And at the time, I didn't have a solution. I just used anger as my only tool. And so eventually I had to move out of operations. But in that process, I had to go to not one, not two, but three mandatory anger management classes. That really helped me out, because the lady there, then our, what you call peep, she was saying, well, you know, people might really want you to solve this. You know, this problem is more than anybody can handle. And for you to get into this in a way that's really hurting you is not a good thing. And really, that experience helped me a lot, because right at the end of my career, I was the acting chief for a couple of months. And we had a a thing where they wanted to reduce companies because of overtime and that kind of thing. And it all worked out, really, because we had a tragedy where a little girl's life was saved. And it was shown that, you know, really cutting companies. But really, I had to go before council and all that stuff. And my attitude then in going to an AA meeting every single day at noon, that really helped me with the control thing. And I really came to the point where when I was trying to convince people that aren't in our job but really want to control what we do, that they'd never seen people die. You know, they'd never been there when, you know, you feel like just a couple of seconds more, this person could have been alive. You know what I mean? And they just don't have that in their experience. And to try to explain that to someone with an idea of you're going to be able to control how they feel about things is really a difficult thing. So the control for me in my own life, now I look at control is the problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it only took me 20 years to do the second half of the first step. When I said, you know, that my life was manageable, just ask me, you know. Right. And the idea is that when you are so focused on problems that you really have no control over, and that's basically anybody but yourself, mm-hmm. that it's really so closely related to the serenity prayer. You know, God, give me the serenity to accept the things I can't control and to have the courage to do what I need to do for what I can. And, you know, I don't know about you, but it's hard for me to understand what I do have control over a lot of times. And, you know, asking for help, which is a biggie, mm-hmm. and talking it over with somebody that you admire. And, you know, you talk about problems because there's always problems. And what I like about that idea, the serenity thing, is that serenity can't be dependent on things going well. You know, there's always something that's going to be a problem for you that you have no control over, or at least that you have to first look at what you can accept if you're going to have any real serenity in what the outcome's going to be. I go to 3 different 12-step groups. I go to AA, I go to Al-Anon, and I go to a religious one. And all of those have their own particular viewpoint or outlook, if you will. And all of them, I need that. I desperately need, as was shown by the mandatory anger management classes, that I need to be able to look at things differently. Because really, at one point, in, you know, especially in the service, I thought all I had to do was get angrier at something, and I'd be able to solve it. Mm. And you really don't see how that really impacts your life and your serenity, you know. And that's closely tied, I think, to the when people say, what do you want to be, right, or do you want to be happy? That's another thing about that control stuff. Now, you know, I think as first responders, we are always wanting to be in control. We drill and we practice and we try to be able to handle problems that a lot of people would be running away from. And, you know, with paramedics and with medical professionals, we think about what's the worst thing that can happen and can I keep that from happening? Mm-hmm. And you train for that and you really put a lot of effort into that. But there's still people still die, you know, and that's not something you're going to be able to affect all the time. So, you know, one of the things I think about control is you really have to look past outcomes. If your whole life is devoted towards having what you consider to be a good outcome, you're going to be very disappointed a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the idea that if you want serenity, you have to really look at what it is you can control and don't let those things that you can't control control you. Well, now I figure when I try to manage my life, I'm in big trouble. That's when I need to surrender. And, you know, that's a hard thing when you're thinking about not in control. You think that surrender is giving up, and it's a totally different concept. than giving up, because it's in my genes that I'm not going to give up on things, but I do have to surrender to things that are out of my control. And it's only when you do that, you're able to make an intelligent and rational decision, not only for yourself, but for the people around you. I don't know, that sounds kind of preachy, but so the idea that control is the problem is a way to look at it. And I think one of the big things that changed in me was my heroes. Like, I used to think my heroes were people that didn't need anything from anybody, could solve problems on their own, could just think about it. And, you know, like the sickle faith problem we had, you know, I could just show people if they were, you know, screwing up, and that would be okay. Somehow I'd be able to have a positive result on that. And you know, that just doesn't follow, because there's a lot of other factors, you know, being represented by a labor bargaining unit and having a contract, and people want their time off. You know, to try to interfere with that process can be very harming, because now, as we all know, everybody has agendas. And the thing about agendas is there's always truth in the agenda, but it's not the whole truth. The only thing you bring up are the things that put forward your agenda. And if you live your life like that, especially with relationships, that is really a difficult thing. It's a hard thing, because people don't want to be controlled, number one, and they certainly don't want to be controlled by what you think is right. They want to feel what they think is right. And it's a hard thing, especially when you're a supervisor. We had a fire chief fired here for me, and there was another friend of mine in another city that got fired. And the thing about it is, we all make mistakes. We're all human. And the thing about agendas is, especially when you're in a position of authority, and if people want to get you, they can get you. You know, that's the thing. And it's not that you're a bad person. It's just that there are things that you can't control that will drive you insane if you let it.
Yeah.
So I didn't think I was going to have too much to say, but it was
Well, I'm thrilled. You said a couple really awesome things. I really appreciated that you just hit on the word insane, insanity, because that is exactly how I feel. And I imagine a lot of people feel when they're going in this vicious cycle of trying to control things. For me, it makes me feel like I'm losing my damn mind. I am insane. And
what it does feel like, and it is kind of like that, especially if you keep doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. I've heard that
right.
Be a definition of insanity.
Yeah. So I appreciate your take. And I know enough of your story to know that you went from anger management to, I don't know, I've called you like a guru and a Buddha and all that. And it's like the person that I know and you now in this time of your life, I'm like, I can't even imagine you being angry and raising your voice.
That's oh, it still cool. happens.
It's oh, I'm life. Sure. I'm sure. You're a human. But yeah, the fact that you see that control is the problem is so massive. And
well, it's closely related to, I like the God one that I go to, the 12-step group thing. You know, he talks about the tyranny of comparison. And that's real closely there, too. You know, you look at someone and you think, man, they got it together. Why can't I be like that? Well, that idea of when you compare your insides to somebody's outsides, that's a losing proposition for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't get in their head. You don't really know what's going on with them. And that's the other thing, the ugly words. I think one of the most ugliest words is, I don't want to be beholden to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my heroes now are people that have had really terrible things happen to them of no...
Like no fault of their own?
No fault of their own, but they're still really, really wonderful people to be around, because they've found out that secret, that surrender is the answer. You know, control is not the answer. Surrender is the answer.
Mm, yes. Well, that is a beautiful cherry on top to all of the folks that I have talked to today about this topic. I really appreciate you taking the time to hop on this call with me. And yeah, I'm excited to share this with everybody else so they can
the, we'll see. People might be like, what a bunch of crap. I am in control. But hey, you know.
Well, you know, that's the thing. And really, that's why asking for help is so critical, you know, and not isolating. You know, what I like to say is, you know, the biggest problem with isolation is you get such bad advice, you know, and so.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. That's very true.
Most of my difficulties that I have had in my life are because I'm trying to control a situation. That I can't just be, I can't surrender, that I can't accept whatever is going on around me. Like I'm so powerful, all knowing that I can decide what outcomes are appropriate and inappropriate. And it's just this wild feeling, this illusion of control that we as humans think that we have. The truth is we don't. We don't have control. I mean, we like to believe that we are these like rational decision makers and we're carefully making these choices in life based on data and logic. But as soon as a wrench gets thrown into our system or into our process, all hell breaks loose. And boy, we sure don't know how to be in that space and surrender to the fact that maybe the data wasn't strong enough to back us up. Maybe the logic, the things that we know isn't strong enough to back the interruption up. You know, that is one of those feelings of helplessness for a lot of folks. Something that I hear from first responders is that we are strategic. We have learned. We know the steps to take. We know what to do when these incidents happen. We know what to do on these runs. And then a wrench gets thrown into the system. The medic shows up late, right? Or perhaps the cruiser can't get to the scene because there's snow drifts or whatever the thing is. And all of a sudden, we have to shift and recalibrate to the situation. And I think that in those situations, if we can look objectively, kind of stand outside of ourselves and look at the situation at hand, we realize that we never had control in the first place. And that can be a scary place to be, really, to think that I have this perceived control, but it's really just an illusion. I think believing that we're in control of what happens to us, even when we know that that's not always completely true, it's really a big and important part of mental health in general. So with all the challenging things that have happened in the past few weeks, I've been able to see very, very clearly that I have never had control over anything, that I can't insert myself so much in someone's life that it changes the path that they've already chosen to take because they chose that. And who am I to say that that isn't the best path for them? And we don't always have to agree, but we can surrender. And so I was reminded of this reading. Some of you may have heard it before, but it is a reading about acceptance. And really, that is kind of the key to everything, this feeling of loss of control, of floundering, of fear, of hopelessness, helplessness, all of those feelings. The key is acceptance. The key is surrender. And so I want to read it to you. And acceptance is the answer to all of my problems today. When I am disturbed, it is because I find a person, place, thing, or situation, some phase of my life unacceptable to me. And I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it's supposed to be at this moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing, happens in God's world by mistake. Unless I accept life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world as on what needs to be changed in me and my attitudes. There can easily be a lot of resistance in that. So today, I simply create the opportunity for you to question, what have I convinced myself that I have control over? Where do I think I'm really all that powerful that it has created chaos in my mental health, in my mind, in my life, for those around me? Is there an opportunity for me to surrender, to let go, to trust the process, all of those cliche things that we hear? And maybe there's an opportunity to learn that the power is actually in the acceptance and the surrender.
You don't ever have to worry about growing old. If he makes it to November, he'll see 53. So they pump and a pause, and then he stays on his knees. And you can say it's a shame.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of After the Tones Drop. Today's show has been brought to you by Whole House Counseling. The music featured on this episode was by the band Lone Rover, and the song is called Any Other Way. You can find more music, including this song, by visiting YouTube, Apple Music, and Spotify. As a note, After the Tones Drop is for informational purposes only. It is not a replacement for medical or psychological advice. It is not a substitute for professional healthcare advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please contact a local mental health professional in your area if you are in need of any assistance. You can also visit afterthetonesdrop.com and click on our resources tab for a ton of helpful information. And as always, we want to thank Vince Adams, Yeti, and Sonda for allowing the continuous use of our show's music.